Welcome to Writers on Writing. I'm your host, Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and I'm here every Wednesday evening from 6:30 to 7, talking to authors, editors, agents, poets, those connected with the art or the business of writing. Tonight my guests are San Francisco literary agents Michael Larson and Elizabeth Pamata. Before starting their agency in 1972, they worked for 6 major New York publishers. They've sold books to more than 100 publishers and are authors themselves. Michael is author of Literary Agents, What They Do, How They Do It, How to Find and Work with the Right One for You, a selection of the Quality Paperback Book Club and Writer's Digest Book Club. He's also author of How to Write a Book Proposal. Elizabeth is author of Fun Places to Go with Children in Northern California, now in its 8th edition. They've reviewed books for the San Francisco Chronicle. They appear on panels, writers' conferences. They give talks. At their agency, Michael Larson handles all the nonfiction, and his wife and partner, Elizabeth Pamata, handles all the fiction and some nonfiction. Theirs is Northern California's oldest literary agency, and they're members of the Association of Authors Representatives. Welcome, Michael. Are you there?
I'm here.
Let's see. Is he here? Just a minute. Michael?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi there. How are you?
Fine, thanks. And yourself?
Great.
Good, good. Thank you very much for inviting me on.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you. You and Elizabeth have been agents for more than 25 years and obviously very successful at it. What is it about being an agent that you love?
Well, I love ideas. They're this kind of immutable thing that can be shaped to suit an author's skill, an author's vision of what a book should be. At the same time, balancing what they want, the book they want to write, with what the market can make use of.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing writers together with editors, is, when it works as well as we want it to, is a great pleasure indeed.
Mm-hmm. How has publishing changed over the years since you started your agency?
Well, it's more than half an hour just in that question.
The short version.
Things come to mind immediately. One is that it's gone from being an editorially driven business to a marketing-oriented business.
Mm-hmm.
When Elizabeth and I were in publishing in the 60s, the phrase publishing business was an oxymoron.
Mm-hmm.
People used to lament and say, why can't this be run more like a business? Well, their prayers have been answered. It's now an MBA, bottom-line-oriented business, and there's a lot of people who are still unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that we see as agents is that this kind of sea change, this reversal has taken place in the roles of agents and editors. Editors have become agents. Agents have become editors.
Hmm.
Editors have less and less time to edit, which is why they got into the business in the first place,
mm-hmm.
Because they have to be the in-house agent for the book. Stir up interest in the editorial board that has to pass on it, and different parts of the company, sub-rights, publicity. So they have less time to work with the writers to make their book successful.
Mm-hmm.
This has fallen increasingly the challenge on agents who have to be editorially aware enough, sharp enough, to make sure that something's 100% before it goes out to a publisher.
Yes.
Because what an author gets depends on what an editor sees.
It used to be that writers felt that they could submit a less-than-perfect manuscript to an agent and that they would see beyond the flaws. And I've heard that this is no longer the case.
Well, there's certainly some truth to that. It depends on how close it is.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Canfield, who model for writers in a number of ways, shares the chicken soup stories with 40 readers. And I think one of the essential ways for writers to get feedback on their work is to share it with a lot of readers. I tell them 40 to 50. Ken Blanchard does that.
Interesting.
And I mentioned five different kinds of readers in my books. It's really important that they share their work and get feedback on it. I encourage writers to join or start writers' groups,
mm-hmm.
a table full of people that gets together every week, critique each other's work. It's immensely valuable.
Yes.
People are doing this online as well as offline.
Mm-hmm. Well, what stage should a writer be in their writing before they even think about contacting an agent?
That's a very good question. It used to be that if you had a book to sell, that was the time. But increasingly, that is not the case. Certainly for nonfiction. If a novel's as ready as it can be, it's 100%, then it's time. But for nonfiction, which 90% of which is sold on the basis of a proposal, you need a 100% proposal, but, you know, author's ability to promote it has to be as strong as possible, and this has to be proven by a promotion plan.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I'm about to say doesn't relate to serious nonfiction, serious biographies, or literary books like Angela's Ashes, reference books, but for most nonfiction, how-to nonfiction, with a wide national audience, an author's promotion plan will be at least 8 times more important than the content of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Their ability to get themselves around the country and sell copies of the book, do presentations, that's extremely important.
Yeah. So then I take it that it's beneficial for a nonfiction author to do such things already as public speaking or teaching or whatever.
You're exactly right. Mm-hmm. Major houses are looking for people who, as one of them put it, are ready to pop, have
yes.
their national networks in place, go around the country, who understand their books are marketing tools,
mm-hmm.
that there's far more money to be made in back-of-the-room sales and talks than there is in royalties.
Mm-hmm. How do you choose the projects that you decide to take on?
Well, we, Elizabeth and I, have kind of an eccentric kind of California approach to what we do. We like to handle books that we like by writers we like and sell them to editors we like.
Mm-hmm.
Liking publishers, liking multimedia, multinational conglomerates is impossible. But there are a lot of wonderful editors in New York who are sitting behind desks waiting to get excited about books.
Hmm. What is the best way for writers to contact you?
Well, maybe you could ask Elizabeth that about fiction. For nonfiction, generally, I can tell from most books, based on what you've already heard, that I like to see a title and a promotion plan.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can tell from those two pieces of information whether I can help a writer.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if we're going to be an autobiography or memoir, we'd treat it differently. Promotion would be less important.
Yeah.
So when a proposal is ready, people can send me a title and a promotion plan, or they can call and we can chat about it.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a website, larson-pomata.com. And an email address is Larson Poma, P-O-M-A, Larson Poma, at AOL. So one of the things I think we pride ourselves on is being accessible.
Mm-hmm. Is there any limit to the number of publishers you'll contact before you stop?
Okay, there's a big difference. You can ask Elizabeth about one of the novels she worked on. It took her a long time. But nonfiction is much more straightforward. We do a multiple submission to 8, 10, 12, 15, depending on the book, the best editors at the best houses.
Mm-hmm.
So we know in a month, 5 weeks, whether we're right or wrong. So it happens much faster in nonfiction.
Mm-hmm.
Fiction, as you'll hear from Elizabeth, you don't send out that many copies unless it's a big book.
Yes. What is the most common mistake writers make when they contact you?
Well, not really a mistake so much. It's really just things that they don't know about the business. You know, we have this free brochure we send people happily, and it's also available on our website. And it's kind of a mini version of the last 4 chapters of my book on agents, which I call a prequel, things that writers should know before they contact agents and never do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the biggest thing I see is they're not really ready for an agent. They haven't either developed their craft enough, they haven't shared their work with enough people to make sure it's 100%. Or in terms of, in nonfiction, they've got a book's worth of information, and they can write it. In terms of being published by a major house, they're not ready to do that kind of promotion, have that kind of promotion plan.
Mm-hmm.
But part of there are many reasons why I believe that now is the best time ever to be a writer. And one of them is that writers have more options than ever to get published.
Hmm.
I mean, agents are prisoners of the system. They can only make a living by selling books to big publishers. Writers can be published by a big house, a small house, a regional house, a specialty house, a university press. They can self-publish it, a major trend and a very positive one. They can even self-publish it online. They've got all these options.
Yes.
And agents are stuck with those behemoths in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to get things through the system back there, which is getting harder and harder.
Before we move on to Elizabeth, do you have any advice that you think is really important that writers know?
I think the challenge is, as it's always been, come up with fresh ideas. Let me speak for nonfiction, Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
Come up with fresh ideas. Be able to promote them. And for nonfiction, certainly, practice what I call niche craft. Find a niche, N-I-C-H-E, that writers enjoy writing about and promoting, and just you can carve a career out of it. Our most mm-hmm. successful nonfiction author is a guy named Jay Levinson.
Yes.
That name may not mean anything to you, but hopefully the name Guerrilla Marketing does.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more than a dozen books out now, and a website, and a newsletter, and it's endless. It's going to be an endless series. So it's easier than ever for nonfiction writers to build a career out of writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of the fabulous opportunities writers have today.
Well, I thank you so much. And
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
I guess we'll move to Elizabeth. But first, I'd also like to say that I recommend your books quite a lot to people. The one on writing a book proposal is just excellent. I know writers who have gotten book contracts through following your guidelines, and your agent's book is wonderful too.
Well, would you like cash for that? I should have a check.
I'm telling the truth.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's very kind.
Thank you, and we'll take a break as we wait for Elizabeth Pamada.
Super.
Thank you.
Take care. Hello?
You're here already. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Writers on Writing. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett and KUCI FM in Irvine. And we're talking to Elizabeth Pamada. We've just talked to Michael Larson. They're with the Michael Larson Elizabeth Pamada Literary Agency in New York. I'm sorry, in San Francisco.
In San Francisco,
they're
yeah.
so huge, they seem like they're in New York.
We used to be in New York.
Really?
Well, we were born and bred in New York.
Interesting.
And now we saw the light.
You saw the light. Well,
huh?
I'm so happy to have you online here.
Thank you.
How did it come that you handle the fiction at the agency and a little nonfiction, and Michael handles all the nonfiction?
Oh, because I love fiction.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the world of books because of fiction.
Mm-hmm.
I handle nonfiction sort of because it sells books. And because every once in a while I find a wonderful one. But the reason I'm in the world of books is because I'm a fiction reader and fantasizer.
Mm-hmm. How do you like to be approached by prospective clients?
Well, for fiction, I simply like to see the first 20 to 30 pages after they have finished and polished their first novel, along with a one-page synopsis, and an SASE, and daytime phone number.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even need a query letter.
Mm-hmm.
Because what counts with me is the quality of the writing. Does it make me want to turn to the next page? And all the talk in the world and all the great letters in the world won't tell me whether or not I can write a good novel.
Are there particular types of novels you especially like to see?
Oh, I handle a very big range. Commercial, literary, sometimes a romance. Every once in a while, if it's wonderful. I do handle some fantasy and a teeny bit of science fiction, more fantasy, and historical fiction. Anything that will keep me awake and keep me turning the pages.
Mm-hmm. I'll ask you a question I asked Michael in terms of nonfiction. And for you, in fiction, how has publishing changed over the years since your agency started?
It's much harder, much, much harder to sell first novels unless they're absolutely fabulous, for two reasons. First, people are publishing less. But second, those who have already published are the publishers waiting for their second or third book, and therefore they're taking up future slots as well as present slots.
Mm-hmm.
If they're literary, people are still looking for good literary fiction. And that's very encouraging, but they don't want to do a book and let the author build. The author doesn't have a chance to build.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they have to start with perhaps small presses or sometimes even university presses.
Uh-huh.
And then their breakout book, normally in fiction these days, has to be the first.
Interesting.
Because once if you have not made a success of your first, it is very difficult to mm-hmm. sell the second.
I've heard of writers changing their names after the second book.
We suggest it.
Mm-hmm.
If it's the second book.
Interesting.
Because you don't have a second chance anymore. You know, when 10 years, 20 years ago, an author would be nurtured by a publisher until they built an audience. Now you have to have it or you're gone.
Mm-hmm. What does it take for writers to be successful at publishing fiction?
Well, first, they do have to have some kind of head about promotion or publicity.
Mm-hmm.
They can't just hide in their closet anymore. If they insist on hiding in their closet or their garret, they could then still have to do something online because they have to build an audience.
Mm-hmm.
Every writer I know who's a success has a website.
Interesting.
An interactive website in which they talk to their talk to their audience, you know, perhaps show first chapters, give their fans a first glimpse of the first chapter of their next book, that kind of thing.
Interesting.
They have to be much more out there. And successful authors also spend, unfortunately, 2 or 3 days a week just doing publicity, writing to their fans. They can't just write 24 hours a day anymore.
When a writer is approaching agents and is getting turndowns, which seems to be a very common occurrence among writers, how should a writer interpret rejections? And when should they realize that either they should keep sending it out or they should take a look and see if they need to do a bit more work?
Well, if the rejection is simply a thanks but no thanks, they could ignore it and remember all of the people who've gone before them that were rejected many, many times. You know, like The Good Earth was rejected by 14 publishers before it was published and won a Pulitzer Prize. Catch-22 was published by the 22nd publisher to publish it. If people just say thanks but no thanks, just ignore it and keep going. But if a rejection strikes a chord, if they give a reason, even if you don't totally agree with the reason, think about how you could make your book better, not to answer this person's suggestion, but do something else, give it a little more spin, perhaps. You don't have to respond, if the rejector, the agent, or the publisher says, I didn't like it because Tony loved Marge, and I think they should not have gotten together. And you don't say, well, that's how it has to be. Think about it. Maybe they could live in another way. Change it a little, not change it to suit somebody else. It still has to be true to you. It's still your book, no matter what, no matter how many times you're rejected, it's yours. And people aren't rejecting you, they're rejecting the book.
Right. And you said something about it, the comment striking a chord, that if you read something in that rejection letter that deep down you agree with, that that's a good sign that maybe that's a part of your book that you need to work on.
Absolutely. Too many people now think that just because they have computers they can write. Writing is not typing. Writing, you have to revise, you have to share with, before you send it to publishers or agents, share your work. Get feedback. Would people who'd plunked down $10.95, $29.95, would they buy the book if they had to spend the money? You should ask your friends, ask your enemies even, see if the book works, and then send it out to professionals.
A lot of writers visualize their first book as being a wonderful, beautiful, large hardback, and yet I hear other writers who love having their first book in paperback because they feel that it affords them more of a chance that readers might spend $6 versus $23 or $24. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's one of the reasons that there are several publishers who have lines of new American fiction. They publish literary first novels as trade paperbacks because they're not in hardcover and they don't cost that much. And it's easier for someone to pick up a trade paperback than a hardcover. Only in genres do people get started anymore in mass market.
Interesting.
You can't build an audience in mass market unless you're in a genre.
What should be one of a writer's prime concerns in choosing an agent? Instead of just going through writer's market and just, sending to everybody.
Well, there's a wonderful book by Jeff Herman. I think it's called The Insider's Guide to Writers and Editors.
Yes.
And that really gives in-depth looks at agents, how they like to receive things, the kinds of things they like to sell, and even tells what they do when they're not working. So if you're a hiker, you might want to choose someone else who hikes when they have time off. You have to be simpatico. It is a working marriage between the author and the editor. And unless you are, unless you truly want a shark to represent you, you might want to find someone who you can like and spend time with. You want to invite them into your home, and would you want to go in their home? I do think. I am in California. That is very different. We have this. Michael and I have a what we call a California credo, in which we only handle books that we like by authors that we like, and we only sell them to editors that we like.
Mm-hmm.
That's
an interesting way of doing business.
Do that.
Uh-huh.
But I truly think that if you're going to work with an agent, you should want to spend time with them.
And lastly, what advice do you have for writers who think they want you as their agent?
Well, do your homework. Be as professional as you can. And write as well as you can possibly write. And be 100% committed to your career.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thank you for being with us, Elizabeth.
Oh, thanks so much, Barbara.
And Michael had mentioned that our listeners can find you at www.larson-pamada.com.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, they can also email you and find out more about you.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Love to hear from you all.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for calling.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. If you'd like to, again, find out more about Michael Larson and Elizabeth Pamada and their agency in San Francisco, do check out their website. It's quite informative and quite detailed. And join us next week when mystery author Barbara Serinella will be my guest. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett at KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. And if you need to reach me, you can fax me at 949-760-1443. Thanks for listening and get to work. Remember, it's all about writing like there's no tomorrow.